Hey, it's Andrew Siciliano. Coming up on Inside Coverage, Aaron Rodgers speaks. Where is he going? We'll let you know what the once and maybe future Steelers quarterback had to say. Teron Armstead joins us as well. Does the former Dolphins offensive tackle think they should just keep Tua? Plus, Deshaun Watson back to Cleveland? I'm telling you, there's a chance. Jory Epstein thinks so. Ben Fox with us as well. It's Inside Coverage next. It's another edition, everybody. Welcome to Inside Coverage on Yahoo, the how and the why, any and everything you need to know about the National Football League. My name is Andrew Siciliano in the home office where I woke up today and went, there's not much going on. I mean, the Browns are going to throw their new coordinators on the podium. What does Travis Switzer have to say? It is Switzer, not Switzer. And then all of a sudden, Les Snead makes a trade. It wouldn't be a day that ends with a Y in the offseason without some kind of earth-shaking, and I don't mean earthquake, but earth-shaking news in the National Football League. So let's talk about it. It's not just me. It's my good friends from Yahoo, our senior NFL writer, Jory Epstein, and our gambling expert, Ben Fox, who we missed in Indianapolis, but we still raised a glass without you. It is good to see you both. Ben, you miss Jory running through hotel hallways.
Listen, I'm always jealous of not going to the combine. Obviously, you know, we didn't miss the, we got the same weather here in New York, I think probably as you had in Indy. So we didn't miss anything there, but just the event and, you know, the late night talking and tidbits and eating and drinking, not to mention all the rumors. It's a really fun event that I think people don't know if they haven't been. Kind of how valuable it is, and so much not about the prospects really that are on the field for the NFL draft.
Coming up, we're going to have Teron Armstead on, who is, Jory, still to this day, the fastest offensive lineman in combine history. He ran a 4.71. I think you could have beaten him with your backpack on last week running down the hallway to JW.
You know, I think, Andrew, that you and some of the scouts talking to certain NFL insiders are using the same clocks. And there's a reason that your time would be so different than the official time, because I can tell you my official time wouldn't beat him. But no, I think it's awesome you have Teron on. I went to the Offensive Line Mastermind Summit a couple of years, which is kind of like the offensive line get together over the summer that Teron was very involved in, Lane Johnson as well. And listening to Teron break down defensive lineman and how he saw DeMarcus Lawrence and teaching guys different pass sets on the field, I always remember. So awesome that you had him. And, you know, I might not run fast, but today, despite running a little longer than usual today, Aaron Rodgers started talking just before I started running, and I was back for my run and stretch before he was done. So when you think about how we measure time and speed in today's world, that was the length of my run today.
Jory ran a half marathon today, and Aaron Rodgers is still talking. Coming up shortly, we'll tell you what Aaron Rodgers had to say. And we'll ask Teron Armstead about Tua Tagovailoa, his former quarterback. Does he still have a place in the NFL, and why can't it just be Miami? Because Teron thinks maybe they should just work it out. That is coming up shortly. Let's get to the news, however, breaking late in the day. Not the Trent McDuffie trade, but the fact that the Patriots are cutting Stephon Diggs. It's 1 year. He had a good year. He helped them get to the Super Bowl, helped them win an AFC championship game. There are certainly off-the-field headlines, and maybe that is part of his release, but it is also a friendly reminder that when you next week, and we will do this next week, report to you the alleged value of a contract, don't believe it. Wait till you get the paper. Wait till you can actually dig in. Last year, Stephon Diggs, coming off a major knee injury in 2024, from which he recovered, you know, tip of the cap to him, it was reported he signed a 3-year, $69 million contract. In reality, Jory, it is a 1-year, $19 million contract. The Patriots paid him that money. I think they got the money's worth, and they are now moving on. And of course, that means we get into the A.J. Brown conversation or whichever wide receiver, Alec Pierce, they may want to go get to replace Stephon Diggs, but it was one and done there. I think was beneficial to both.
Yeah, I think it makes a lot of sense that they had this year together. I mean, for Stephon, he was able to show, look, he still has a lot in the tank on the field. And he was someone who the locker room really appreciated having. He was one of their vocal leaders. And he was someone who helped Drake May as a young quarterback come along, not only because of what Stephon did directly, but also because of the attention he commanded on the field, which opened up some of the other targets. I agree with you, the idea of having these outs in the contracts, particularly when guys are getting older, when they have an injury history, makes a lot of sense. And I immediately texted some people around the league when I saw that Stephon Diggs was cut. And I said, okay, so does this clear the way for the Eagles to make the move? And I think it's kind of a twofold answer. On one hand, there is a reason that it makes a lot of sense. Well, there's the first reason, which is, yes, Mike Vrabel, A.J. Brown. Mike Vrabel was the head coach of the Tennessee Titans when A.J. Brown played there. We all know there's a reunion. The other sneakier reason that it makes a lot of sense for the Patriots to trade for A.J. Brown, in my opinion, is we know that Philadelphia Eagles general manager Howie Roseman likes to feel like he won the trade. And so if right now they're saying maybe it's a first, maybe it's a first and a second, but it seems like that feeling of getting a first-round pick would help validate the trade for him, especially when you think about what they gave up to get A.J., even if he was younger then, and perhaps a bit healthier. I look at this and say, okay, great. Well, the Patriots have the second to last pick in the first round. They are pick number 31. Howie feels like he gets his first round pick. The Patriots feel like they de facto gave up an early second round pick, and everyone's happy. That's, to me, in theory, what makes sense. But when I talk to people around the league, some of whom know some of these players, they still feel like the Patriots aren't going to be super convinced that when you talk about the cost, when you talk about both the draft capital and the contract, that Mike Vrabel and co are going to think A.J. Brown is that much more worth it than Alec Pierce, who they could have for cheaper.
Yeah, I think Joy hit the nail on the head. You also have Alec Pierce, right? Free agency. Patriots also have an extra fourth, I think three extra six. So they have a little maneuvering room in the draft. Also, they have cap space. So they have kind of multiple routes to add to really what was a big glaring area of need for the team, right? And Stephon Diggs had a good season. I don't think, though, he eclipsed 40 yards in any playoff game. I want to say he had like 100 yards total in the postseason, three catches, 37 yards in the Super Bowl. And the Patriots just didn't have that guy who, when everything's going wrong, it's just, okay, forget about the plays. We can get it to that X receiver, that number one guy. He can beat anyone. It doesn't matter who they're going against. They have to scheme something up. So I think for that, it makes sense potentially to draft someone as well. There's a lot of good wide receivers in this draft, could be 4 to 6, maybe even in the first round. I think the Patriots have a lot of avenues there to add to it. And really also, now a kind of player's coach in Mike Vrabel that I think people like to play for, and a young quarterback clearly ascending in Drake May, and obviously offensive coordinator in Josh McDaniels. So they have kind of that infrastructure that you would think wide receivers would also want to go to, and just a team environment, seems like a team on the rise. And they have a lot of cap space as well to spend in free agency. So it seems like a good destination for a wide receiver, and also something the Patriots clearly need.
Yeah, it's interesting what you say there, Jory, about how he's got to win every deal. Doesn't everyone want to win every deal? Isn't that kind of the way this whole thing works? Like, you're always trying to walk away going, yeah, I got the best of it, even though in reality, the best deals are generally when both sides can walk away saying, I feel like I got a good deal. It is something that we kept hearing in Indianapolis about this draft, and it's not the first time we have heard it, that the bottom half of the first round, they're not really first rounders. In other years, those guys should be second or maybe even third rounders. True, but you got to pay them first round money. Also, you do get that fifth year, which is significant. For example, if Breece Hall went at, say, pick 31 instead of in the second round, the Jets would not have had to have used the franchise tag this year because they would have had the extra year. So there's a good and a bad to picking at the bottom of the first round. The good is you get that extra fifth year. Go back to 2018 when Ozzie Newsome and the Ravens traded up to 32 to take Lamar Jackson at the bottom of the first round, because you do get that extra year, which for a quarterback is that much more significant. I'm curious to see if Stephon Diggs, now that he is getting set free, is part of the conversation next week when free agency begins, because he does have a pretrial hearing on off-field violence charges. They are it's strangulation and other criminal charges, felony charges, an alleged dispute with his personal chef. He has a pretrial hearing on April 1. He strikes me as a guy that, you know, teams might just say, you know what, we'll check in a few months on the second or third wave of free agency. He can still play. He's a veteran, though. He made his $19 million. He has been well compensated over the last couple of seasons. I don't know that he is going to break the bank next week, but I have known to be wrong. All right, the other big move today, actually, this is the biggest of the big moves. This was one that kind of got telegraphed when Trent McDuffie was making a community appearance yesterday. He was asked, hey, what team would you like to play for, if not the Chiefs? Was it last August? Oh, I missed that part of it.
I think it was last August before the season started. Okay. I believe so, yeah.
Okay. So thanks for saying
it. It circulated yesterday, though.
That's where I was thrown off. He's from Southern California, and he's coming home now to play for the Rams. He ended up at St. John Bosco. He started in Servite. He's from Orange County. He is an L.A. guy, and he was traded to the Rams today. Les Snead kind of telegraphed it yesterday when he joked, yeah, of course I'd want to add an All-Pro. And that was the glaring issue. The reason the Rams lost to the Seahawks Week 16 and the reason the Rams lost to the Seahawks in the NFC Championship game, they had two fatal flaws. Number one, their special teams, and number two, their corners. They have already addressed the special teams, at least they have started to, and they hired a new special teams coordinator in Bubba Ventrone, and now they are addressing the corner position. They are trading for Trent McDuffie. They gave up a lot, but if you put the two trades together, which I think is important, and when I say two trades, I mean the trade that they made on draft night last year with the Atlanta Falcons when they moved out of the first round. Atlanta moved up to 26 and took James Pierce, and the Rams moved down to the second round. They took Atlanta's first round this year, which is now 13, and they drafted Terrence Ferguson to the second round last year, the Oregon tight end. I think this trade makes all the sense in the world. You add an All-Pro player, and the Rams are great at playing the third-round compensation game. There's probably another one coming to them in a year or two. They know how to plan this out. I think this is a home run, at least from their perspective. Jory, what do you think?
Yeah, first when I see this, I think about the Rams' recent philosophy, which is why don't we invest more in the defensive line and a little less in the secondary, particularly at corner, because they felt like if their defensive line was strong enough, it would elevate the play of everyone in that cornerback position. And so when I see that, I'm like, why are we now giving away a first-round pick and a whole bunch of other compensation to get Trent McDuffie, even if he's a good player? But if you look a little bit further back, I mean, you have the Marcus Peters trade that they once did. You have the Jalen Ramsey trade. They do have a history of trading defensive backs. And so I think it makes sense in the grand scheme of, one, what the Rams have done their business in, and two, the grand scheme of their life cycle, which is that they have Matthew Stafford. He said he's coming back. He announced that at NFL Honors as he won MVP. His I think it's, what, four daughters on the stage with him in their dresses. It was adorable. And they want to capitalize on this window, so why not try and get something out of it? Now, I still think there's also this idea of, rather than just draft two young corners early in the draft, when it can be really challenging on a young corner's confidence if they don't feel like they have someone to come back to and stay afloat of what's going on in the defensive scheme. You can have someone like Trent who also helps bring a younger corner along, and then you figure it out. But it's definitely interesting to see what they're trying to do with their window, and also, like you said, how they're going about it.
And they've found, like, I think what they believe is an inefficiency in the market, right? Which is that instead of drafting a player, which is all on potential, right? You can draft Justin Jefferson at 22. He can turn into Justin Jefferson. He can also be Treylon Burks, who the Titans traded for AJ Brown, right? And so you don't get the replacement when you trade the star player. And so I think they've found, hey, we've seen Trent McDuffie as an elite corner in the NFL. They will likely have to pay him, right? So that's also the cost. And they're giving up a lot of draft compensation, but you know that he can play at a high level in the NFL. And like you said, Andrew, this was the reason, along with special teams and a muff punt and giving up a punt return in week 16, that they didn't potentially make and or win the Super Bowl this year. So they are right there. Sportsbooks actually moved the Rams to the favorite over the Seahawks. They were just behind them before this. So again, a lot of projection, but they're basically the consensus favorite now because of that. They're one of 10 teams, a lot of teams with 10.5 win totals so far. The Rams are one of those with 10.5, generally tied about to win, atop to win the NFC, atop to win the NFC West with the Seahawks as well. So they're kind of 1-2 right now in the Super Bowl odds and a couple of those other markets. But this seems like the biggest, you know, the area of need for the Rams. And it's really interesting because, as Jory's alluded to, they had kind of these two divergent paths where if Matthew Stafford decide not to come back, well, now you have those two picks. Maybe that goes defense. Maybe you're looking at another corner quarterback that you're drafting. Potentially, we had discussed before when the Max Crosby news came out, could you use one or two of those picks to trade for Max Crosby and add to that defensive line? So they decide to address corner. Seems like a really good move. And that team is just kind of reloading. I do think it's interesting overall, though. They still will have plenty of time to talk about their schedule, but just the fact they still have Matthew Stafford, who still had that back injury, and they're going to Australia and Mexico City. That's one of their home games. Like, they're still a fascinating team, but just in terms of this deal, I think it's a great deal for the Rams, even though they gave up a lot.
Just to follow up, Ben, on what you said about the market inefficiency, I think it's a great point because we often give Rams head coach Sean McVay credit for being schematically creative and schematically adapt. He's sticking to one principle. Yes, he has his general philosophies, but based off what defenses are doing, what the league trends are, he is adapting. And I think, like you're saying, that's what the front office is doing as well. So it's not that they're changing their mind. It's that they're saying, well, now we see this is back to being an idea like we liked it before, even though there was time in between where we didn't think it made sense. And I just think the front office deserves a little bit of credit for that in terms of how they're able to get relatively good value pieces because of those trends.
Yeah, and they look at it this way. They still have 13, and that trade last year, in retrospect, was brilliant. I thought it was brilliant at the time, and it's great now because they have the Falcons' first-round pick, a pick the Falcons would love to have back, I guarantee you. Who knows what's going to happen with James Pierce? He had one good year, and now everything's up in the air considering his off-field stuff. So they give up 29. They don't have to play a rookie corner. Who knows? Maybe they do draft a corner at 13, but they don't have to because they get McDuffie. Now, you do have to pay him. The one that was problematic for me when you do all the math here on these trades is giving up the 3 in 2027. I didn't like that for them, but they've got their plan. They see a path to a compensatory pick in 27, so they're not too worried about that. I don't think they were ever in the Max Crosby running whatsoever. I think that was more media speak, partly because of what, Jory, you pointed out. They have to pay the other guys. Right, they have to pay all the guys, the Byron Youngs, the Kobe Turners, the Jared Verse, the Braden Fisks, all those guys that they have drafted well on the front seven the last couple of years, where for the most part, they have kept their picks. They've entertained big trades, but they haven't actually pulled the trigger. I think from the Kansas City perspective, and let's not forget about that, the Chiefs, and I don't want to call it a rebuild. They didn't make the playoffs. Their quarterback got hurt. He's coming back from an ACL. He says he's going to be back week one. I think one of the quiet stories no one's talking about yet in the offseason here as we get to free agency is who's going to start week one if Mahomes can't, and are they in the veteran quarterback market, and Minshew didn't tear his ACL? Like, what's the deal with that? But either way, they now have 9, 29, 40, 74, 109. So they have 5 picks in the top 109.
Good work, Brett Veach.
Yeah, they have 4 in the top 74. They have 3 in the top 40. They have needs. They're cutting Juwan Taylor. They clearly can refortify that side of the offensive line. They need another downfield threat. They're going to have to eventually find Travis Kelce's replacement, even if he comes back and no one's thinking he's leaving right now. You need to have that next guy ready to step in. They're going to have to go find a corner now as well. Don't forget Jalen Watson is also heading to free agency. Leo Chenal heading to free agency. There are a lot of holes to fill. I think we focus so much on the quarterback and Mahomes' recovery and just get him a weapon and get him a running back and they're going to be fine. They need a little more work than just get Patrick Mahomes a weapon here, Jory.
Yeah, and I think where I have some degree of confidence is that the Chiefs have developed defensive players, and particularly in the secondary, repeatedly over recent years. I mean, when you look at Dave Merritt, who's been coaching their DBs, and Spags, obviously, as the DC, I think in part because of their success, and they're just good coaches, and in part because Spags isn't taking another head coaching job, it doesn't appear like he's kind of seems pretty settled there relative to his career. And because of that, a lot of the guys beneath him are also pretty settled because the way the league works, fair or not, they're like, oh, if that guy's calling the plays, how do we understand what each of the position coaches are doing? And people don't always go that extra mile to do the research. And so because they've had that continuity on their defensive staff of just really strong coaches, not just schematically, but also from a development standpoint, I do trust that if the Chiefs get some players in there and have some potential to work with, they'll be able to get a lot out of it.
And the Chiefs 15-1 to win the Super Bowl, which is their longest odds since 2018, Patrick Mahomes' first year as a starter. They have the fifth best odds, tied with the Patriots, to win the AFC. So behind a couple, their odds are right kind of in line with the Chargers. So whether or not you like the Chargers more, I know our pal Frank Schwab had them power ranked very, what did he have, 4 or 5 in his power rankings. He's high on the Chargers. The Chiefs, I agree, you tend to just be like, all right, Mahomes will figure it all out, but he's getting a little older, he's coming off that injury, and we saw this, what was it, a couple of years ago with the Bills, right, where they were having that supposedly rebuilding season, then they were in the playoffs again, had a chance, I believe, couldn't get by the Chiefs. So there's nothing to say the Chiefs can't do that, but I think last season was the first where we saw they were mortal. And we'll see if that continues this season, if that was a blip or kind of the start of this is the rebuild, like the Patriots that had kind of the first dynasty a little down, and then they got back to the top of the mountain after a few more years.
Coming up on Inside Coverage here on Yahoo, we'll talk to Tron Armstead. Is Tua back to Miami the right way to handle this? We'll ask Tua's former left tackle. Also coming up, let's find a home for Kyler. And what exactly did Aaron Rodgers say today? You're going to want to hear this. It's next on Inside Coverage. It's Inside Coverage on Yahoo. Let's talk about Aaron Rodgers. Because, yeah, it's that time of year again. Hi, Jory. Hi, Ben. Hi, I'm Andrew. So Aaron went on Pat McAfee today. And immediately after coming on, and there was a lot of colorful language, he basically said, if you're expecting me to make some kind of announcement, then you can bleeping turn the bleeping TV off right now. I'm paraphrasing, but not really. We are where we were a year ago. People think he's going to go to the Steelers. He doesn't want to commit yet to the Steelers. He wants to live his life and work out. He says he wants to work out so that his wife still finds him attractive and things like that. He then went on a rant, if you will, again with colorful language, that they had to leave their beach home because he claims there is a bounty from paparazzi, which he accused of flying drones over his home, of getting photos of his beloved. There was a lot going on. But the headline from the football side of it, Jory, is that there is no deadline. He has spoken with Mike McCarthy. Again, he expressed his love for Mike McCarthy and Omar Khan, the Steelers GM. And he said they have not given him a deadline. He also pointed out, and this leads me to wonder if he's playing little games here with the Steelers, that they haven't put a contract in front of him yet, and that he is going to be a free agent. We all connected the dots last year with the Vikings, or maybe even the Rams, if Matthew Stafford had left. Do you read, Jory? And there was a lot there. He also talked about the Olympics. And look, he talked about a lot. Do you read between the lines, which he never wants you to do because now you're putting words in his mouth, that Rodgers is telling the Steelers, hey, tell me what you're going to pay me, or maybe I'll just go elsewhere?
Yeah, for Rodgers to say, hey, there's no contract offer on the table and nothing progressing was pretty surprising. I mean, we talked about the combine last week when Omar Khan, the Steelers general manager, said, hey, the door's open. We love Aaron. And I said, I don't know, because this is the same Omar Khan who a couple years ago said he had full faith in Kenny Pickett to be the quarterback. And within a month, Kenny was off the roster and Russell Wilson and Justin Fields were on it. And so I don't think that we should assume the Steelers are not going to similarly speak highly of Aaron, which I do believe they mean, but also also decide, hey, either we want to roll with Will Howard or we want to try some other year option that's a little bit younger, or maybe have competition with Will, but we are going to try and see what we have in him because, hey, by the way, the 2027 quarterback class is supposed to have a lot more guys at the top than the 2026 one does, even if the draft is in Pittsburgh this year. To me, I say, well, what was the timing for? Why did Aaron Rodgers come on? When I first saw he was going on and he'd be on in a couple of minutes, I said, okay, well, free agency's coming and the Steelers said they don't want this to drag out, so maybe he's going to share an update. Either one, whether or not he's coming back to play, or two, where he's playing if he's coming back. And when that didn't happen, maybe he's bored, but I also think it's possible that, hey, last I checked, Kyler Murray was announced yesterday that he's going to be released from the Cardinals, assuming there's not a surprise trade. And so then all of a sudden, when another talented quarterback who some people would rather have than Aaron Rodgers gets on the market, we see Aaron Rodgers for the first time in 7, 8, 9 months decide he's going to go back on TV. I don't think we can rule that out as a possibility. Like you said, reading into it, he did not say this as why, because if he doesn't have an offer from the Steelers and now Kyler Murray is on the market and he understands that there's Kyler Murray, there's Malik Willis, there are a couple other guys, Kirk Cousins, who might be in contention for teams that Aaron Rodgers wants to play for, that he wants to remind both the Steelers and teams like the Vikings that might want a Kyler Murray that, hey, I'm available to and we should have a conversation. Oh, and by the way, I'm working out.
Were you saying you were working out, Jory, or Aaron was working out? Wasn't both?
I was working out while listening to Aaron Rodgers say he was working out. So I was just there you go. Starting very
meta.
My run.
Yes. Yeah.
It was okay. Very meta. I feel more bad for Jory that once Aaron Rodgers said there wasn't going to be any update for whatever podcast or music she was going to be listening to, that she then turned that off to listen to the entire interview.
I had a whole lineup of the Seahawks podcast I was going to listen to, the Bengals. I was like, my whole playlist of things to prep for the show. And I'm like, well, I don't want to risk Aaron saying something. Continue.
Wait, hold on.
Yeah.
Can I
go ahead, Andrew?
I was going to say, I have an admission to make here. It's a guilty pleasure. I actually like listening to Aaron. I've said this forever. And yes, there's a lot of passive aggressive airing of grievances. And yes, I perhaps passive aggressively will send it right back through this camera or any other camera that I've sat in front of throughout my career, going like, why is he still talking? Like, come on. But I enjoy it. Years ago, I went to NFL Network. I've told the story, I think, before, and went to one of our bosses and said, Aaron Rodgers on the podium for a half hour when he does his thing in Green Bay, because he's a quarterback, he has to speak. It's great TV. Let's just take it live. Half hour. It's great TV. We never did it, and now he does it for McAfee. So, yeah, I could be critical. It's all part of a dance here. I'm not trying to do it for clicks, because sometimes you're droning on and on. You're going, all right, come on. But I do enjoy listening to it. So, there. There's that guilty pleasure. No, I can admit it, totally admit it.
I'm glad you said that, Andrew, because as much as there are some necessary eye rolls during these segments, and quite frankly, yes, Aaron's not even the most eye roll deserving of everyone who was on that show today, but I think it's also worth noting that there are some great nuggets, like when he was talking about discussing plays with Mike McCarthy and how there was a play they ran back in 2010 with a sixth offensive lineman, or I think this one was good a stuff. Fullback who was helping on the wheel route, and here's how it's coming back, and here's some of the cyclical nature of the league. Like him or not, he's got a brilliant mind and an extremely deep understanding of the NFL. And when he is willing to open up that part, I love listening to it. I agree.
And I've always gotten along with a guy. I haven't interviewed him in a long, long time. I'm not going to pretend like we're best friends or anything. We're not, right? When I run into him, he's always pleasant. I don't have a bad word to say about him. Sometimes I do roll my eyes a lot.
Going away after football, as he said. So no TV, no media.
He said he's
going to
be Kaiser
Sose.
Yeah. When it's all done. Okay.
So get used to these segments. Go ahead, Joy.
Ben, you consider yourself a Vikings fan. So I'm curious, as a Vikings fan, do you want him on the Vikings? Do you want him on the Steelers? Do you want him to retire? What do you want from that perspective?
If he goes to the Vikings, I will be finding another team to be watching next season.
No,
we've done this already. He's seen this. This is Brett Favre again, except Brett Favre could still play. I mean, the Vikings in 2009 kind of made the deal with the devil. they got Brett Favre, and ultimately the interception, the NFC Championship game, that all happened. He stayed 1 year too long, didn't work out. You had the whole Jets thing. But every offseason it was, is he coming back? Is he not coming back? He did this in Green Bay, and Aaron Rodgers was there. So I'm kind of surprised that history is repeating itself in that way. I just don't think the juice is worth the squeeze for the player. That, you know, Aaron Rodgers, I believe, was 23rd in QBR, right in between Bryce Young and Jacoby Brissett. Like, Tyler Shuck had a higher QBR than Aaron Rodgers. We saw him against an elite defense in the playoffs against the Texans. They could have played that game for 30 quarters and the Texans would still have won. The Steelers still would have no points on the board. He just isn't good enough as a starting quarterback anymore. So I don't know exactly what the market would look like for him. The Steelers, regardless of whether they, you know, bring him back or not, they were earlier this offseason, they've now moved to 80-1. They were 100-1 to win the Super Bowl. Those are their worst Super Bowl odds in 50 years. The team isn't close to competing with or without Aaron Rodgers, but I just don't really get, I don't think the player is worth everything else that comes with the player, which I would agree is captivating from a media perspective, may not be as captivating from a locker room perspective if you're one of the teammates or DK Metcalf or others who've lived through it. I could certainly be wrong. And, you know, we thought his career was kind of towards the end and then he had a couple MVPs in there, but that was still a couple years ago. Like, there's the history of quarterbacks at 42, 43, is basically Tom Brady, right? Who've had success. I just don't see that with Aaron Rodgers in whatever, if he plays another season, if he plays for the Steelers, wherever he goes. Long answer, no, don't want him with the Vikings.
I get your point. I get your point. But it also goes back to our point that Jory and Frank and Ciro, I think we all agree that if the Vikings bring in another quarterback, and they are going to bring in another quarterback, it's not going to necessarily be to compete with JJ. It's going to be to start in front of JJ, and then JJ needs more time to marinate. That's how the Vikings look at it. They're not looking to bring in another Nick Mullins. I don't actually mean Nick Mullins, but somebody of that ilk to stand behind JJ McCarthy. They're looking at someone or for someone to start. Could that somebody, Jory, be Kyler Murray? It's really good math for whichever team wants to sign Kyler Murray. As you said yesterday, the Cardinals have told Kyler he's done. Kyler posted what I thought was a pretty heartfelt and hard on himself, mature goodbye. He said, I'm sorry, basically, I failed you in that they only made the playoffs once and they didn't win that game. I was at that game. It was in L.A. He finished the game on the bench. He didn't go back in for the final series. It's a really odd thing when you go back and look at it. I think people outside of Arizona have forgotten about it. But if it's basically the situation with Russell a couple of years ago. Free quarterback. If you want a free quarterback, which is what the Steelers did because the Broncos were still paying him, you can get Kyler Murray. The Cardinals are on the hook for about $37 million. All you have to pay, assuming he agrees for that amount, is $1.3 million, the veteran minimum. The Vikings make all the sense in the world. But I also think Kyler's going to have more of a market than maybe people would have projected a couple of weeks ago. You can talk your way in or talk yourself in, your collective team in to Kyler Murray, I think, pretty easily.
Yeah. When I talked to people about this at the Combine, Andrew, they said the next question was, is Kyler going to be released? Because like you said, if he's released, there's a totally different financial calculus. Now, we're not 100% still. It's highly unlikely he gets traded, but technically he could still get traded up until Wednesday when that release is set to take effect. But there is this idea of, hey, well, Michael Bidwell doesn't really like to pay people to not work. That's the Cardinals owner, of course. And so what if he decides that I'm not paying this guy so much money to not work? And then you say, okay, well, what if they find a trade partner and something works out? Those seem unlikely at this stage, which means that all of a sudden, a lot of teams who were like, I don't know if I can pay this guy, can pay this guy, because as you said, everything but $1.3 million will be offset by the Cardinals. All of a sudden, Kyler, who might have wanted to get paid a certain amount, doesn't have to worry about that because he's getting paid it regardless where he goes, which leads me to three situations that I think make the most sense, because once you take money out of the equation, because Kyler will be receiving it no matter where he plays, you say, well, who is going to allow him to win because they have a strong surrounding cast, and which team actually has a starting opening? And the combination of those, I think, come down to the Minnesota Vikings, the Atlanta Falcons, and the Indianapolis Colts. And I know none of them have a clear path necessarily. Minnesota, you'd have to compete with JJ. And quite frankly, I'm not convinced that's the best match. I think some of what Kevin O'Connell wants to do really wants this more traditional pocket passer, reading the field type of thing. And I'm not saying Kyler can't do that. I'm just saying I don't think it's his superpower necessarily, the way that his dual threat is. Then you get to the Falcons, which, yes, they have Michael Penix Jr., but when is he going to be ready? When is he going to be healthy enough to come back? And the same being the case for Daniel Jones in Indianapolis, who I think that the Colts are hoping he will be ready early in the season, but he tore his Achilles in December, so I don't think they can feel confident about that, and they've granted Anthony Richardson the right to seek a trade. But really what all this comes down to, as I've said repeatedly on the show, is defensive coordinators and defensive coaches around the NFL do not like playing Kyler Murray. They can't stand it. They say he's a pain to game plan for, and he is a pain to play against, because you never know what he's going to do and how long he's going to extend the play for. Even his offensive linemen talk about how long they have to keep blocking for. As long as he has those abilities, which he does still have, even if he's maybe tapered off a little bit, he will have value in this league, particularly at the cost he's at this year, which means there will be suitors.
Yeah, and I feel like his value has been diminished. I mean, he's in five seasons where he started at least double-digit games. Each one of those, he's had a QBR over 50, right? So he's 57, 61, 63, with 50 being league average. So he's an above league average quarterback. We've seen it. We've seen him even start, I think that one year they started, 7-0, 8-0, somewhere in there. He has tended to fade as the season goes on. He gets a little nicked up potentially with injuries. So there is some of that. I think it's also a question of the athleticism you assume is still there. I didn't even realize this before looking up today. His first two seasons, he had 226 carries as a quarterback, which is wild. And he only had 306 over the last five seasons, but he's averaged 5 yards a carry. He can certainly do that. I do agree with Jory. I think Minnesota will, as it should be, brought up as a situation. It isn't going to be the mentorship of JJ. And I think that's going to be a question of how important is that for Minnesota? I do think it is important. So I think someone like Geno Smith probably makes a little more sense for the Vikings. I think this is a great fit in Atlanta as well. Good luck defending a Bijan Robinson and Kyler Murray RPO game. That should be fun for defenses. They have a good defense. They have a weak division. They have an easier path to the playoffs. Like, that seems to make all the sense in the world. And Indianapolis, too. People keep, like, Daniel Jones, I don't know when he's coming back, but I can't imagine it's week one. And they also, they do have Riley Leonard as a backup, but they have a lot of space, certainly, for another quarterback there. I think that could make a lot of sense, too. And the Jets are there as well. Not a good team, but somebody that they have a quarterback need. They have money. They have space.
Yeah. They got plenty of money, and no one has any idea who the heck their quarterback is going to be. They could sign five of them, for Pete's sake, and then hope one of them actually ends up working. The Daniel Jones thing is interesting because if we didn't have this on the show Monday, we theorize what might happen. They use the transition tag there, which is basically a right of first refusal tag, $6 million cheaper than what the franchise tag would have been. The question is, does somebody make a run at Daniel Jones? And if somebody does, and Chris Ballard then allows someone else to write his contract, does he match his contract? Would the Vikings, where Jones did spend 5 minutes 2 years ago, go sign him? Would somebody else go sign him? Is Daniel Jones one to leave? Is there a greener pasture out there? I've said repeatedly, I think he's the most important piece in free agency. And the Colts story have told him, you can go look around.
Right. I think, as you note, Andrew, that it's important important that with the transition tag rather than the franchise tag, the Colts are not only allowing Daniel Jones to entertain offers from other teams, but whereas the non-exclusive franchise tag would have required 2 first-round picks for any other team to get him, the transition tag does not require that compensation. That said, I think this is a totally different calculus if Daniel Jones, 1, didn't tear his Achilles, and 2, didn't tear his Achilles right in December. We often talk in this league about how the first totally season back from an Achilles tear, an ACL tear, guys aren't themselves. They're not fully right. Maybe they're playing at 60, 70, 80% of what they were. Cousins a couple years ago, I recognize he was older, but we saw that he did not look right that first year. And in that second year when he got playing time, he was back to looking closer to how he had looked before. And so if you're going to tell me that a team is going to say, a team desperate enough to need a quarterback, which means they probably didn't have a great year last year, I would say, of all the teams we're talking about, are going to bank that not only Daniel Jones can look like he looked last year rather than much of his New York time, but also that he's going to be healthy enough to do it, I think it's really hard to reckon with. And so when I look at the transition tag, I think the Colts are telling us two things. One, by starting by tag that's about $6 million cheaper than the franchise tag, you're starting any negotiations for a long-term contract at a different place because, one, there's $6 million less this year. That would be your floor for the salary because obviously he's not going to take less than what he would get on the tag. And two, given that a second tag would be 120% of this first tag's cost, then you say, okay, well, that one is also about $7 million cheaper than it would have been. So that's about $13 million over 2 years that you're saying. You're also potentially saying, though, maybe the Colts don't want to give Daniel Jones a multi-year deal right now, not because they don't believe in him at all, but because he's still going to be making getting a huge raise relative to last year. And yeah, best case scenario, it's a Sam Darnold-like situation and someone like the Vikings or a team like that sees it. But there's also a very real chance that he doesn't look right. His play isn't what it was before that injury so late in the season, assuming available earlier in the year. And then the Colts are in a situation where maybe GM Chris Ballard's 9 lives are over. Maybe Steichen doesn't still have the ownership blessing. And I'm not wishing that upon any of them. But if one of those things were to happen and the Colts year goes wrong, do you want to have your quarterback on a multi-year deal for your next general manager and potentially your next head coach? I'm not sure that the Colts are going to want that misaligned timeline. Whereas if they have a 1-year deal, they can line it up a little bit better. And if it goes well, great. You pay him next year and they'll be thrilled that he got back to that health and performance worth paying.
I was just going to say quickly, I thought it was interesting from ESPN research, no QB has been tagged with the transition tag since 2000.
Since?
So this is...
Since?
1996 was the last time it happened, right?
Jeff George in the 90s. 96 was the last transition tag on a quarterback. Jeff George.
So very rare. Only 4 players have played the entire season as well since that time with the transition tag. So usually something gets worked out. And remember, too, the Colts don't have first-round picks for the next 2 years because of that Sauce Gardner Correct. Deal. So that complicates factors as well. Just Daniel Jones played his best unequivocally as a quarterback with the Colts. So they do know that. But he's also a guy who played with a broken leg that then led to an Achilles injury. So can he get back to that level? That's something only they can know.
Absolutely. And I was going to say real quick, the Bengals did not tag Trey Hendrickson. There had been some thought like they're going to squat on him and tag him and then tag and trade him. And I'm like, seriously, like that is the most Bengals thing of all time. Like we have something valuable. You can't have it. We want something in return, even though he's due to become a free agent. And they were never going to sign him and bring him back. I just didn't see that world happening. And the Seahawks did not tag Kenneth Walker. So Kenneth Walker is going to hit the free agent market, unless that is they find a new deal for him before next Monday. We keep telling you Wednesday is the start of free agency, and it is. Like officially the new league year, the ball's going to drop. And there's going to be parties and streamers and confetti in Times Square at 4 p.m. Eastern on Wednesday. But really, it's noon Monday when the negotiation window opens. Not legal tampering. It's legal. That's when the window opens at noon. That's really the start of all of this. And at that point, Kenneth Walker is going to be a free agent. All right, coming up, what do the Dolphins do? We'll ask Tua's former left tackle, Teron Armstead, will join us. Also coming up, Jory's telling you there's a chance Deshaun Watson is the Browns quarterback. Really? That's on Inside Coverage after this. We just got back from the combine, so it's only fitting that we have the fastest combine offensive lineman of all time on the show. He's more than that, though. He just retired after 12 years and five Pro Bowls, and now he's in the podcast game and doing pretty well on that. The Set with Teron Armstead is the pod that you got to go figure out and find out. Teron Armstead, how the heck are you?
I'm doing well. Doing well. How about you?
Doing well. How's pod life treating you?
Pod life is great. It's fun. Get a chance to stay around the game, talk ball, you know, share my voice, my opinion, what I like to call my 72 cent, which is great. It is more work than I originally anticipated. It's if you want to be good and stay on top of what you're talking about, you have to study, you have to practice all those things. So I definitely have an appreciation for the media. No question.
What's the one thing you've learned that you didn't know was coming?
The level of consistency, how demanding it is to continue to share thoughts, information, put out content, the appetite of your viewers and subscribers. Like once you start to gain a following, that appetite grows. So, you know, keeping up with that demand is it's a challenge, but it's great.
What's more difficult, getting ready for, I don't know, Myles Garrett? You didn't face him very often. Try to think of great defensive ends in the NFC South. JPP, I don't know, somebody like that. Or Shaq Barrett, or like getting YouTube subscribers.
Getting YouTube subscribers is more challenging because it's more of a unfamiliar space for me. I'm a rookie in this space still. At the time I was playing against JPP, Shaq Barrett, I was pretty well versed in my craft and knew what I was doing. So this has been a more challenging battle.
All right, no, so talk about your most.
They were great.
Sorry, I cut you off there. Sorry, Bets. My connection.
No offense to those guys. They were great. That was all.
No, totally. I got you. Let's talk about your most recent team. Let's talk about the Dolphins. Because recently on your pod, again, it's the Set with Teron Armstead, you kind of made the case that if it's going to be such a bad cap hit for the Dolphins to get rid of Tua with Jeff Hafley coming in, why don't you just keep him? Like, you're going to pay him. Just keep him. Tell me why you think that's kind of the play here.
In my opinion. You know what I mean? I think if the situation is toxic, where it's a broken relationship, can't really mend the fences, all those things, that's not the situation. These people don't know each other. But you're taking the financial penalty, regardless whether Tua is in the building or not. You don't have the leverage that's favorable as far as trade value right now. So I think you allow Tua to, if that's where he wants to be as well, if all things healthy from both parties, you allow Tua to be there, compete openly, completely openly for the job, whether you're bringing in someone else to be the starter or Quinn Ewers to be the starter, you let him compete openly. And then you let the NFL life happens and injuries, unfortunate timing of injuries to quarterbacks and other positions throughout the league, it can change the leverage and trade value, in my opinion. And it might be completely hypothetical. I don't know the weeds of it. It was just a thought, and I shared it.
So I know you're in this weird position of, like, you literally just walked out the door a few minutes ago, figuratively speaking here, right, in football time. So you know these guys. At the same time, it's you know, sometimes you almost know too much. Was it a different Tua last year? Because at times the guy on cam calling out teammates and having to walk some of those comments back, it seemed like a different guy, like he was trying too hard. Like, what was going on there?
It looked different to me. A lot of things looked different. On the field, off the field, looked different. And more so, it was that was unique to me and caught my attention. The sharing of information, him being as openly transparent or vulnerable as he was in post-game conferences and media conferences, that was unique to me. And I really haven't try to discover what was the reason behind it. My conversations with Tua, we were, you know, our friendship, our brotherhood. We talk about there's a lot of other things in life to discuss. So while he was playing this season, I didn't bother him, anything football related at all. Talked to him, you know, after the switch happened when Quinn Ewers took over as the starting role. And he was in good spirits as a teammate, just wanted to be the best teammate, help Quinn Ewers succeed, help him win, help him prepare, help any of the other guys and on the scout team get the defense ready best way he could. So that's really all that I have in that category.
What was it like running the scout team? I know it wasn't you, but I mean, if I had told you a couple of years ago that this guy is going to be running the scout team to end the 2025 season, I don't know that anybody would have believed that.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I wouldn't have. I wouldn't have believed it. No doubt about it. In my short stint with him, I saw a lot of things that you would classify as elite, which we know these things. We know and we identify them as his strengths, his precision, his time, and his accuracy. This past season, those weren't on display as much. And his strengths became weaknesses. I saw him miss throws. I saw the timing off and causing turnovers and interceptions. So I was really wondering what was the cause, what was the case. And it's a lot of factors that goes into NFL season. I know from having 12 of them, a lot of personal life goes on. A lot of coaching changes goes on, a lot of relationships. And so it's a lot of dynamics that goes into NFL season. But our goal and our job is to produce and produce at a high level. When you're not doing that, it starts to bring on a series of events, benching, trade talks, releases, all that. It's a part of the game. It's a part of the business of it. Our job, regardless of what we're going through personally, we have to go out and produce. And if not, there'll be changes made.
And sometimes change is a good thing, like a fresh start with whether it be the new staff there and Jeff Hafley in Miami or a fresh start somewhere else. He can still play, right? We agree on that?
I do. I believe so. I agree with you. I believe he can still play.
All right. Switching topics, though. Let's switch quarterbacks because Aaron Rodgers on Pat McAfee this morning. No decision yet. Praise Mike McCarthy, and he praised Omar Khan, and he said they've talked, but there's no offer, and whatever, it's Aaron. Do you think Aaron can still play? Like, do you think Aaron, and he took his team to the playoffs last year, can still be a guy that leads your team, whichever team, whether it's the Steelers or the Vikings or wherever he wants to go, to the playoffs?
I think if I'm ownership at any one of those teams, I'm leadership at any one of those teams, I need to see immediate buy-in. Like, not being on the fence. I didn't like the situation with Pittsburgh last year. How long it lingered before Aaron Rodgers was the quarterback in Pittsburgh. It's so many livelihoods affected. It's so much time and cohesiveness that needs to happen, so much chemistry that needs to be built. Like, it has to start now. Being in New Orleans with Drew Brees for 9 years, the entire receiving group, the entire skills group will be in California catching passes with Drew around this time of the year. So, like, just building that chemistry, getting familiar with each other. If he's going to play, I would love for him to get into an organization now, and let's not string this thing along like last year.
Last year, he strung it along for a while, but I don't know. Part of me says that they knew and they didn't want, they meaning the Steelers knew, but didn't want anyone else to know. Like, hey, maybe we can go to the draft and fool people. I don't know that they could do that this year. I mean, they have Will Howard, and Aaron praised Will Howard today. Rookie last year was hurt most of the year. You know, finally got back at active near the end of the season. But they're picking 21st. I don't know that there's a quarterback there at 21 that they want, but free agency begins in a week. Like, organizationally, whether or not they want to tell us, don't you kind of have to know?
I would hope so. I would hope so. That's one position that I really don't want to flirt with. Like, I want to be sure. and if going into the draft and looking for our guy is the decision, like, that's the direction we're going, I want to be sure on that too. Not necessarily floating and flirting with a guy plus 40 that, you know, of course, physically declining, still mentally and cerebral, his cerebral mind, he can execute a lot of different things, but physically he's declining. You won't have him for long, regardless if he's your quarterback this year or not. So I wouldn't want to have an unknown in that position. I want to be sure about that quarterback spot. And also back to what I mentioned, like the sooner he can get in, the sooner he can get familiar with the offense and the other skilled players can get familiar with him, because it matters.
It does. I'm talking to Teron Armstead here, just hung it up after 12 seasons, 5 Pro Bowls, now doing the podcast thing, played for the Saints, played for the Dolphins. And I'm going to assume knows Trent Williams, who I think is going to play till he's like 50. He's going to be Jason Peters. what's going on there? Because there's no guarantee money left on his contract. I get the vibe. He wants a new deal to stick around. You any insight? What's going on there?
I haven't talked to Trent, but just watching his situation and knowing Trent, he loves to have that security in his contract, because we play a game that's, you know, we play a game 100% injury rate, and he is valuable. His leverage is undeniable, and his impact is as well. He missed time last year more than he has in years prior. So that raises the hesitation for the 49ers. All right, is his body getting old now? Is he less durable now? And those will continue to show face, because that's their leverage play. But on Trent's side, in limited action, still second team all pro. So yeah. Even though I wasn't healthy for the entire season, when I was out here, I was him. I was still Trent, LT1. So it's really at this point, man, you can't argue with the guy. You can't deny what he is and what he brings to the team. So if the 49ers are not willing to hold on and continue rolling on what they've been doing with him being on that left side, I'm sure it's a lot of other teams that will, no question, make that move.
Yeah, the guy's going to Canton. And if you look at the numbers, look at the splits with and without of their different team. Obviously, a lot of it has to do with the quarterback, Christian McCaffrey's health. That's a huge part of it. Not in any way downplaying that. I mean, everyone on their defense got hurt this past year, so that's a huge part of their win-loss record as well. But with and without Trent Williams, they're a different team, and everyone knows it. It's one of the best trades anyone's made the last 10 years is when he wanted out of Washington. They had their breakup, and the Niners got him, and they kind of turned a corner. So you, a couple of days ago, had on your former O-line coach from the Saints, Dan Rochard, who's now with the Bears. Drew Dolman, Teron, kind of out of nowhere yesterday, who they gave good money to from Atlanta, the Bears did last year, went there. And Ben Johnson, I mean, Caleb gets the headlines, but a lot of the offense is just grinding people down with that run game in Chicago. How significant is Drew Dolman walking in this week and saying, guys, I'm good, and retiring at 27?
Yeah, man, sending out I'm good takes to an organization is pretty crazy. But no, shout out to Drew Dolman. Congratulations to you, brother, for your career, and I hope you enjoy retirement. And definitely at peace with your decision. It's significant for the Bears, for their offense, for what they just did. Drew was a huge component to that, a key contributor. Caleb Williams being a young quarterback, he doesn't have that full plate of responsibility of handling everything pre-snap, identifying threats, identifying blitzes, changing the protection for the O-line, tight ends, running backs. That's not all on Caleb right now, because you had a guy, Drew Dolman, who can take that burden and diagnose really quickly and still go out and handle his job after the snap. So that's a void now that Chicago, it's timely for them because they have time before the draft to fix it, opposed to some guys, you know, who would retire the first day of training camp or something like that. I think this timing for the Bears is much more favorable, so they get a chance to address this position and hopefully find someone that can fill the shoes, fill the void that Drew Dolman, he just surprisingly left.
Teron, it's one of the things that I'm not suggesting all fans don't understand it, but it's one of those things that I don't think gets through enough, is how much communication is so key on the O-line, but it's not just the center and the quarterback. Like, if I had a dollar for every time I had a coach tell me that, oh, you know, this guy we're drafting, O-lineman, I don't know if he's going to totally get it, whether it's the system he ran in college, or maybe they don't think he's the brightest, but don't worry, we're going to put him next to so-and-so. We'll say, we'll put him next to Teron, and Teron's going to help him out, right? He's going to tell him what to do. And the same goes for the center. It's you got a rookie quarterback, whomever the rookie quarterback is, or a young quarterback. Don't worry, the center's got all the calls. The center's got all the checks. The center's going to handle all of that. You take away those security blankets, that stuff falls apart pretty quickly.
I think you're spot on, because that's exactly what it is. It's a security blanket. You see, the relationship between a center and a quarterback is always unique. Like, they always have insider code. They have these code words. They just have their own line of communication. So not every call that those two guys have, the rest of the line, we don't know what they're talking about. We have no idea. And it's just, it's that security blanket for the quarterback. He has someone that's another pair of eyes, another brain, to help him diagnose and understand what's happening. Like, centers do a lot more film study than any other spot on the O-line, because they have to. They have to see a safety rotation. They have to see if the linebacker depth is 3 yards behind a D lineman, or is it 5 yards, because that's information. So they have to process a lot. In a matter of breaking the huddle and snapping the ball, that's like a 7 or 8 second window where you have to compute a lot of different, it's low-key coding. It's human coding.
Yeah, it is.
On the spot, and then you snap the ball.
Yeah, I mean, Tyler Lindebaum's about to get paid for a reason. Whether it's in Baltimore, whether it's Chicago.
Very high-priced coder.
Yeah, high-priced coder, right? North of $20 million a year, because they can't tag him in Baltimore, because that tag, and the CBA is kind of screwed up this way, that tag is the same as, say, Trent Williams' tag. So not to say that one is more valuable than the other, but the NFL doesn't pay the center the same as what they pay the tackle. So it's just the way the business works. Real quick, I want to circle back here, before we let you go, to what I mentioned here when introducing you. Your record has stood now for 12, 13 years. You're 4.71 at the combine, the fastest ever for an O-lineman. Do you watch the combine? Like, were you on the couch on Sunday with a stopwatch saying, I don't want my record to be broken?
No, not at all. Not at all. Records are meant to be broken. At some point, somebody will get me. They'll get it. It'll be a young dog hungry to get to the league. He'll get me. The only thing, I just really wanted to be somebody that, like, turns out to be a good old lineman, like, that turns out to have a nice career, not a tight end that they've transitioned to O-line from West Dakota, MacBook State, and the kid never plays, but he got the record for the con. That's the only thing I don't want. That's all.
West Dakota, MacBook State, man. I hear they have crazy NIL money now.
That's hilarious.
But I hear you, and I'm not. There are plenty of wide receivers and DBs in the last 7-8 years that have run like these blazing times, and then you never hear from them again. So I get it. Like, you want your record to fall, if it does fall, to someone who actually has a career.
Yeah, for sure. Just give me 5 years, bro. Hold on, 5 years. Yep.
But I like your attitude, because there are people like Eric Dickerson, who's a friend, and I've worked with Eric in the past. Like, I love Eric. Eric's a Hall of Famer. He's got his gold jacket. We're like, hell no, I don't want anyone to break my rushing record. Why don't I want anyone to break my record? It's mine.
Shout out to legend Eric Dickerson. Shout out to him.
We all look at it different ways. You're looking at it through the media. Exactly. Through the media lens, the set with Teron Armstead. Check it out. Give him a YouTube subscription, because those are hard to come by. But I'm looking at the numbers. You're doing quite well. Teron, continued success with that, man. Hope to see you down the line. Thanks for doing our show.
I appreciate you. Thank you.
West South Dakota MacBook State, or whatever Teron called that. I love that. That would be a heck of a school, and I'm with him. Like, if the record's going to be broken, let it be somebody legitimate who has a career. Teron Armstead, everyone, check out his podcast. Check out this one. We thank you for watching. Jory is back, and Ben is back, and Jory is writing on Yahoo. Go check it out, about, well, various quarterback situations, including the one in Cleveland, in which both Todd Monken and Andrew Berry, the coach and GM in Cleveland, had a chance last week to say, this is Shedeur Sanders' job. Did not. Which has been the company line since the season ended, and that is Shedeur, or Dillon Gabriel for that matter, or, as Jory is writing, Deshaun Watson has a chance to come out and win the job. None of these quarterbacks has done anything, as Monken said, Jory, in the last 2 years, to say, this has got to be my job, we're handing it to you. Whoa, what are you hearing?
Yeah, one of the many reasons that Todd Monken has the chance to be the absolutely right coach for the Cleveland Browns at this time is because he's not coming in with these preconceived biases. And he went on this lengthy anecdote at the combine about, well, if I had kids come into a class to take the test and I grade them before they test over how they look, who they are, would that be fair? And that's essentially what he said about all of his position battles, and particularly position battle with Deshaun Watson and Shedeur Sanders atop the Cleveland Browns quarterback room. It's easy for all of us to think that Deshaun is not going to be the guy. He hasn't played a full season since 2020. There's the suspension over sexual misconduct and allegations of harassment. There were quite a few injuries in the recent seasons. But the reality is he did get enough long in his rotation last season, as you know better than we do, Andrew, to enter that 21-day practice window. And from what I was hearing at the combine, there were people who were turning some heads during that 21-day practice window, being like, maybe this guy can still play. Maybe he's got it back. And I think when you look at what Deshaun Watson has done, he's always been a very good practice player when healthy. And so if you're saying this is a guy who is a really natural thrower of the ball, who understands offenses and defenses at a higher level than the younger guys coming in, even if Dylan Gabriel and Shedeur Sanders are excellent at what they do from a mental standpoint, they're still coming off their rookie year, and Deshaun's been in the league much longer than they have. And when I went to training camp last year, I guess it was mini camp that I went to, and I said, hey, Shedeur, did Joe help you with this, or did Kenny help you with that? And he was like, no, it was Deshaun who told me this tip for the red zone. So he was kind of advising them on this. And when you hear Todd Monken say that ideally they would have a QB1 generally in place by training camp, that's when it gets really interesting, because from a physical limitation standpoint, I'm not positive that Deshaun Watson is going to be able to get back to the point where he can thrive in the regular season or even play really strongly with a live pass rush with whatever the Browns have at their offensive line. But I do think he's going to be really strong in practice. And so I'm not saying that Todd Monken is forgetting the rest of the season, but if he looks way better than Shedeur, which is, I think is the likely reality based off where each of them are in their careers and what their historic skill sets are, the Browns are going to be asking themselves, well, this guy who we're paying for $1 million, Gary, we can't get rid of the cap hit for him. We can't get rid of the cash for him. I know that these aren't always the same. Why don't we give him a chance and see if the ceiling that we believe Deshaun has, which is considered higher than Shedeur, even if they were all saying, hey, Shadur's got elite playmaking ability, why not see if that could work?
And we've seen it from Deshaun Watson just a long, long time ago, right? So we've seen it, I think it was, 2020, 2019, right? His last kind of full season as a starter. But he's was a top 10 guy. Obviously, a lot of things both on and off the field from that time to where we are now. But I think the Browns also, they had this season, right? They drafted Dylan Gabriel. They gave him a shot. They drafted Shedeur Sanders. They gave him a shot. They also had the advantage, I guess, if you want to say, that Deshaun Watson wasn't healthy. So it wasn't necessarily a, hey, Deshaun Watson versus these two rookies. Now you can say, if you're the Browns, kind of with a clear conscience, if you will, we gave these two rookies a chance. We still have Deshaun Watson. Now he's healthy. And the narrative is, okay, we think he's healthy and he's better than these two. We're going to give him a shot. We already paid him all of this money. It kind of makes sense from that perspective. Whether or not it's going to work out is anyone's guess. But it was interesting that, as Jory said, they opened that practice window. He did practice. And it seems like maybe if he's healthy, there could be something there. It's just been so long since we've seen it in an actual game. And it looked like it did years ago.
So there's a lot here. We only have a couple of minutes. Everything Jory says is right. He's in the conversation. He's going to get a chance to win the job. As we sit here right now, a couple of days before free agency, a lot could change. They could break the bank for Malik Willis. I mean, look, there's a lot of things that can change. Deshaun Watson's last great season, if you will, was 2020. Ben, you're right. He threw for nearly 5,000 yards, 4,800. He had 33 touchdowns.
Led the league in passing yards.
Yeah. They were 4-12. J.J. Watt walked off the field that day and said, I'm sorry, we wasted like the prime of your career. 2021, he sits out basically the entire season. 2022, they trade him to the Browns. He's suspended for 2/3 of the year, comes back, does not look right. 2024, week 10 of 2024 was the day the magic happened. The Browns are on the road against the Ravens. They're supposed to lose. Deshaun Watson, with what turns out later to be a high ankle sprain and a broken bone in his right shoulder, goes 14-14 in the second half, leads them to victory. Greg Newsome had a pick six that day that helped, but Deshaun did it. Gets him in position to win the game at the end. David Njoku breaks tackles. Dustin Hopkins hits a field goal. The Browns have 7 wins. They're 7-3. Everything feels right. The subsequent Tuesday, it's announced he's out for the year. He needs shoulder surgery. And he's never been the same. That was 2023. He came back in 2024. Didn't look right. They were bad. He was bad. He tore his Achilles. And that was it. That was it. Now, he had his last, when he steps on the field in August of this year for training camp. Now, he'll be on before, but let's just go to July and August for training camp. It will be 19 months since his second Achilles injury. So if there's ever a time for him to show you still got it, this is it. So I'm telling you, there's a chance. Now, how will he be received when he steps onto the field for the first time, if he does, as the Browns quarterback? When last he left that field as a player, he had torn his Achilles. It was heartbreaking. No matter what you think of him as a human being, like to have a player carted off like that, you hate to see it. And the crowd reaction was mixed, to put it nicely. What happens? I don't know. We've got free agency in the draft, but yeah, everything Jory says, everything that Jory writes and hears, she's dead on. It is definitely part of the conversation, and we'll see how that conversation plays out. No games are getting played tomorrow. We are 155 days away from the Hall of Fame game, which was announced today. The Cardinals with Larry Fitzgerald going in. Yeah.
Can we just be an offseason for a minute? Andrew, no, we can't start counting down to next
season. It's 155 days.
We got home from the combine 2 days ago.
They announced it today. Larry Fitzgerald's Cardinals, Luke Kuechly's Panthers.
You can tell who's playing, but not how many days.
August 6th, Canton, Ohio. Tom Benson Hall of Fame
August
Stadium.
August 6th, we'll call it that. And my last note on Deshaun, I know we've talked about him plenty, is just that the Browns, I think, are banking. I think they actually are really hoping that this works for several reasons. But I think they're also banking on the fact that if it doesn't work out, they have so to lose by putting this hope and this public confidence in the possibility of it. Because one, they think it'll motivate Shadur. And two, they're probably not getting a top tier quarterback till 2027 anyway. So there's just very little to lose. Okay, back to your Hall of Fame game, but don't tell us how many days. This is like when it's late at night and I know I need more sleep. And I tell my husband, you cannot tell me what time it is. That's like the number one rule. Continue.
And you can't look at your phone because once that blue light hits your eyes again, it's over. It's over. It's what I always say. Put your phone down. Stop it. Like you're never going to get back to sleep at this point. No, I don't want to see your phone either. Now I won't be able to get back to sleep. Stop. Put. Anyway, on that note,
sounds like one more thing for a different podcast.
we thank you for watching this on your phone, if that's how you're watching, or listening on your phone for that matter. For Ben and for Jory, my name is Andrew Siciliano. When next we speak, it'll be free agency time, everyone. Enjoy your final weekend of the 2025 NFL offseason calendar. So long, everybody. Wow.